This is the state of things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stasio. The devastation from Hurricane Florence continues as high winds and heavy rains batter the coast. There's widespread flooding and power outages, even as Florence has been downgraded to a Category 1 hurricane and has shifted south. We continue our coverage of the storm around the state with updates from the National Weather Service. Our WUNC reporters will take a look at power outages, also look at centers across the state that are handling people who have had to evacuate, and hear from reporters on the ground in Wilmington and Asheville as we look at the environmental damage as well. First, we're joined by meteorologist Kathleen Carroll from the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Kathleen, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks for having me.
Can you tell us where the storm is now and what the conditions are?
Yeah, so the center of Florence is inland, roughly over, it's kind of middle of nowhere, but west of Wilmington and east of Brunswick, kind of in that just inland of Wilmington area.
All right, and we know go ahead, continue.
No, I was going to say, and she's still a fairly large storm, and her outer rain bands extend all the way up towards the North Carolina-Virginia border. And the southern extent of it, you know, is down almost to Charleston. So it's a very large storm.
Yeah, it's gotten slower and bigger, right?
Yes.
So what can we expect? What were the areas that were hardest hit? We know it made landfall at Wrightsville Beach, but what were the areas along the coast now that have were hardest hit?
Pretty much most of the southern half of the North Carolina coast and the northern South Carolina coast there, basically from Myrtle Beach through like Ocracoke in that area. So a lot of the storm surge associated with this has inundated a lot of those coastal areas, and that's in addition to the rainfall with the outer rain bands and the tornadoes that have been spinning up pretty frequently with those bands.
All right, well, let's stay at the coast. What can people along the coast expect over the next, let's say, 24 hours?
So we're still expecting, with the current position of Florence and the fact that she's not expected to move terribly quickly, we are still expecting that continued storm surge in those coastal areas in addition to the rainfall and the winds. She is still a tropical storm, so she's going to be, you know, pumping those winds and storm surge in there for the next 24 to 36 hours before she starts finally moving a little bit farther west into South Carolina.
Yeah, and when it stays on the coast, that's trouble for a lot of reasons, because then we can also expect the tides to rise and fall in the time that that storm is still lumbering along on the coast itself, right?
Yes, and I saw a graphic on the television they posted. I think there were like 5 to 6 different tide cycles that were happening, you know, from the time that she started impacting those coastal areas to the time when she's finally expected to move far enough inland. And so that's a long time, and that's a lot of, you know, high-low tide cycles to go through for one system.
What do we know about the trajectory of Florence from here?
So she is still expected to slowly kind of move westward, and then she's going to kind of take a curve to the northwest and then north up along the Appalachians.
All right. Kathleen Carroll, meteorologist with the National Weather Service in Raleigh. Kathleen, thank you so much.
Hey, you're welcome. And I just want to outline to folks that even though she, you know, she's slowing down, she's weakening a little bit, the threat for the flooding is still very, very much there. And that's kind of where inland areas are going to start seeing trouble. So folks should not be driving into floodwaters. If they don't need to be going anywhere, they shouldn't be. So make sure that people are heeding those warnings that go out.
Very good. Kathleen, thank you so much.
You're very welcome.
Well, Hurricane Florence made landfall this morning at the North Carolina coast, hit Wrightsville Beach just east of Wilmington. Vince Winkle is a reporter with partner station WHQR in Wilmington and was right there on Front Street when it hit. He is still there now and joins us. Welcome, Vince.
Thanks for having me, Frank.
How are you doing?
We're doing well. This morning around the time when it hit, this old building that WHQR is in with its thick brick walls did start to shake a bit. All the microphones started moving, and there were a few wind gusts in excess of 105 miles an hour. So downtown, there are a lot of trees down, and a lot of the plywood that people covered up their shops with has been literally sailing down Front Street.
What else are you seeing in terms of a lot of flooding, I'm assuming? What else are you seeing?
Yeah, we can see from the studios the Cape Fear River as it passes downtown Wilmington, and it's over its banks in a few locations. All the downtown businesses that are at the level of the river, which is primarily some very nice restaurants, are sure to be flooded by this storm. And we know that the creeks and the tributaries and the Brunswick River is overflowing its banks. And as the meteorologist just spoke, flooding is the big concern here because this is such a slow-moving storm. It's been pouring since last night through today, and then with the high winds and the fact that it's just sitting above us, I expect that there's going to be a tremendous amount of damage.
What are you hearing about people who may have been stranded in their homes in this hurricane?
Yeah, this morning we heard from the New Hanover County Emergency Response Team that they have started to get hundreds of 911 calls for people that need to be rescued from their homes or assisted in one way or another. I know that it's been particularly tough, and I'm sure you'll discuss this later in the show, up the coast in the New Bern area, right, by that river. And it's kind of a mess, and the emergency response teams, and we see fire trucks and police cars flying down the street every once in a while. They have their hands full with this.
All right, Vince, we want to check in with you later, but thank you so much for joining us now.
All right, take care.
Vince Winkle, a reporter with partner station WHQR in Wilmington. Well, let's bring in someone now who is on the ground riding out Hurricane Florence. Sarah Moore is in Swansboro. Her family is one of three that stayed behind in their neighborhood, and she joins us now. Sarah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you, Frank.
How are you doing?
We're surprisingly well. The area that we're in, it's higher, and it's not by the coast. It's not downtown or anything. But we hardly have the ditches filling up. We have a swamp behind our house, and it's been bone dry, so I think that's going to help us out in the rain department. But we do have trees down. We've got a lot of fence damage. There's siding missing off of houses, and the shingles are gone. But there's no big-time damage so far.
And locate Swansboro for us. Where are you?
I am just north of 24. It would be between Jacksonville and Emerald Isle.
Mm-hmm. And what are you seeing as you look out your window? You talked about, you know, in your backyard. Can you see anything else? Apparently, you're relatively dry. What else are you seeing?
Right now, we've got a band going over us. When I first got the call to chime in, it was clear. There was hardly anything going on. There were birds laying on the ground trying to get to my neighbor's bird feeder. But we've got a van going through. The trees are whipping to the side. The rains are going sideways. But other than that, it's all pretty standard storm.
Well, if there is such a thing, tell us why you decided to stay behind.
Our elevation was a big thing. The swamp behind us, like I said, being bone dry was another. And we don't really have any of the coastal storm surge to worry about. We're far enough away that it wasn't a big deal. A lot of the families did decide to go, and us and a couple others decided to stay and help with cleanup when it comes time. Because those families might not be able to come back.
So you're kind of looking out for them and maybe helping out some, particularly, I guess, if people have to leave in a hurry, they don't always have a time to do the things they might to prepare their homes, right? So you've done some of that. And I understand that you have lived through typhoons in Japan before. How does that experience compare?
The structures in Okinawa where we were way more sturdy. Like, it's cement, like a couple inches thick. It's rebar. Last night, I was up all night. You know, I would hear the siding shake. The house would shimmy a little bit. One of our panels that we boarded up over a window actually fell off. No damage, though. It just popped for some reason. But I would prefer a typhoon in Japan over a hurricane here in eastern North Carolina.
And you may have been. I mean, there may have been buildings, too. You might have been in a big city. Now you're in a small town. Is it a single-family house?
Yes, yeah.
So that's a difference, too. But you were there, and you have your young daughter with you. So how is she bearing up through all of this?
She could care less. Like, she slept through the whole entire thing. You know, didn't little ragdoll. We moved her from upstairs to downstairs. She slept on the pullout couch. And right now she's watching some of the downloadable Netflix stuff that we had charged up on the tablet. It's no big deal to her. It's not her first rodeo with a storm like this.
Oh, what other experiences she had?
The typhoons in Japan.
Oh, she was there with you for those.
Yep.
So I'm curious to know how you handle this in advance. On the one hand, you don't want to unnecessarily frighten a child. On the other hand, mm-hmm. you do want to prepare them. How much did you tell her about this, and how much are you saying now?
We were in a coffee shop last Friday, and they had the news up, and they were saying Florence was going to be a Category 4, and she asked me about the red icon on the screen that was moving, you know, the little hurricane symbol. And I told her exactly what it was and what it was going to do. And I said, we may have to leave our house. And she asked, oh, do we get to go see Grandma? And I was like, you know what? We might have to go see Grandma for a little bit. But once it started weakening, we had our bags packed just in case. But all of a sudden, the track shifted.
So we
decided it was probably for the better so we could get back. We could be here.
All right. Well, the track has shifted and the hurricane has been downgraded, but it is still very, very dangerous.
Yeah.
So I'm wishing the best for you, and I'm hoping that you stay safe, and I'm deeply appreciative of your taking this time to talk with us, Sarah. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much.
Sarah Moore joined us from Swansboro. She and her family are riding out Hurricane Florence. Just ahead, we're going to talk with a reporter on the ground in Kinston, North Carolina, as our coverage of Hurricane Florence continues on the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. Stay tuned. This is the State of Things, broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Hurricane Florence made landfall earlier today in the North Carolina coast. Spectrum News reporter Chris Williams joins us now. He is in Kinston. He's been on the ground since earlier this week covering Hurricane Florence. Chris, welcome.
Thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Good to have you here. How are conditions where you are right now?
Well, in Kinston, it is very windy up here, and we just got power just a few minutes ago, but parts of downtown is without power. Right now, you are seeing some moderate rain come down. We do have some trees knocked over. I've been monitoring the EOC, and they say they are getting reports of trees being down as well. And unfortunately, because of the wind gusts, crews are having to scale back going out and restoring power because they can only do so when the winds are so high, and so they have to keep safe as well. But not as bad as what they're going through on the coast, but pretty windy here.
No, but the fact is the scope of this storm is such that we're actually reporting on inland areas on the very day of landfall, and that, I think, gives you an idea of what's going on. What about power outages? Do you have a sense of sort of how big a field there is in terms of how many people are without power, roughly?
Well, statewide, I know that we're like in the hundreds of thousands of people without power. For Kinston, I haven't been able to locate those numbers just yet. I do know power was starting to go out last night, and crews are working their best to restore them. So I'm sure whatever number it is has gone up and down since last night. But I did spend yesterday in New Bern, and that's really a hard-hit area. The Neuse River is just overflowing and is now reaching into downtown New Bern, flooding streets, and so forth. So, like you said, even the inland areas are already getting pummeled.
Well, and New Bern seems to be hit as much, if not more, than Wilmington, and there were rescue operations there. What do you know about the rescue operations that were going on, I think, late night and early into the morning in New Bern?
Yes, and as far as I know, they're still going on. I remember talking with the Craven County officials earlier this week. They say they are getting swift water rescue teams in place to prepare for something like this. And I'm going to be down there again later tonight, picking up coverage down there from New Bern. But as far as what we know, that there are more than 100 people trapped, or there were more than 100 people trapped as of this morning. I know officials are asking people to go to their attics if they're stuck at home. And some are leaving a light on or shining a flashlight out to let crews know that they're inside their homes as well. So it's a pretty dire situation down there in New Bern. We're about 45 minutes away in Kinston.
All right, Chris. Well, we will stay tuned, and I appreciate this update with you. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Chris Williams is a Spectrum News reporter covering Hurricane Florence from Kinston. This morning, North Carolina Governor Roy Cooper delivered a briefing with the latest on the response to Hurricane Florence, and WUNC Capitol Bureau Chief Jeff DeBeery was at the briefing in Raleigh and joins us now. Hello, Jeff.
Hey there, Frank.
What is the governor saying?
The governor is, again, urging people to be extremely cautious, telling them that they need to stay inside, stay off the roads. He noted that the wind gusts in Wilmington this morning, and I couldn't believe Vince Winkle just a few minutes ago talking about a three-story brick building shaking. Governor Cooper noted that these are the strongest wind gusts that have been registered in Wilmington in more than half a century. And they gave an update. We're now up to more than 20,000 people who are in shelters across the state. At this point, dams are holding up. There's not any environmental issues that, you know, we've talked about, you've talked about here on the program in the last couple of days. So it was, as his briefings have been, pretty comprehensive. We also know that 500 National Guardsmen are already out on missions. And if I could, let me just take a quick turn and add to the report that Chris just gave, because I've got some numbers in front of me. I've spoken with folks from Duke Energy and also the electric co-ops here in North Carolina, and right now it's about 550,000 people that are without power in New Bern, or in Kinston, rather. It's between 5,000 and 6,000. And just one other thing, we heard from I heard from one emergency management official today who just noted that if you do have to go into your attic, do not do so without an axe or some sort of tool where you can get through the roof if it, you know, if it comes to that.
Wow, and that is still going on. We are still at the height of this storm, as in terms of emergency management, relief efforts, and rescue efforts still going on across the state. What do we know about areas that have seen the most flood damage, at least as far as they can tell from Raleigh?
So from the best I can discern, I talked to the governor early this morning and then again this briefing at 11. It seems like New Bern really has had the worst of it thus far. There were between 100 and 200 people that were rescued last night. Some of the rescue efforts actually were put on pause because the wind was so strong that the emergency management officials didn't want to put first responders in harm's way. And as we've heard here on the program, there are still believed to be several dozen, maybe as many as 100 people in New Bern who are still seeking rescue. And that's where a lot of those North Carolina National Guardsmen are. At this point, we know that there are, I want to say it's about a dozen. I'm not sure of the number, but these swift water resources and these swift water vehicles, these high water vehicles, are going out. It's a mix of federal and state and local teams, and they're trying to address where the needs are, and then of course go get folks.
It speaks to the power of this storm at all levels. I mean, the governor talks about the wind gusts in Wilmington, and certainly Vince Winkle put a fine point on that when he talked about that brick building shaking and the microphones shaking on their arms. The storm surge, which was probably record-breaking, which is pushing water up the river, and so New Bern being at the confluence of two rivers very close to the coast is seeing the most flooding because those rivers are being pushed upstream because of storm surge. And then the rain itself, and I know Governor Cooper addressed that this morning as well.
It has just come ashore, and it's going to be here a long time, and it's going to cut a wide swath across our state, and then head out west. We know the rains are coming there. I've been out and seen what rock slides and mudslides can do in western North Carolina. So for overall damage, it will be hard at the end of the day, I think, to find a rival for this storm.
Governor Cooper this morning at a news conference. So talk about the latest in terms of emergency management and response. Where are state resources right now, and how are they being deployed?
So there are several medical shelters that are set up. We know that those are at capacity, or very close to capacity. Two of those are in High Point and Goldsboro. There's another medical shelter in Clayton. I was told by one of the emergency management officials within the last hour that there will be other medical shelters opening in the next 24 hours. He did not have details for me at this point. Folks are just reminding people that 211 is a number they can call if it's not a 911 emergency, but if they're in need of help, they're needing to learn about where shelters are, they can call that 211 number. In terms of where the resources are being allocated, there weren't a ton of details that came out about that at the 11 o'clock briefing, but it's, I mean, it's really stretching to a wide area in the coastal plains right now, if they can get there, of course. I mean, we heard that there were 17 roads that, as of mid-morning, had been blocked. So Highway Patrol and some of these National Guardsmen are working on clearing the roads. So, of course, the utility companies, the first responders can get in, and then, of course, the utility companies as that second wave.
And the governor wanted to warn people and remind them, those who are sheltered, to remain sheltered. The fact that it's made landfall does not by any means mean this is over. In fact, we're right in the middle of it.
No, that's absolutely correct. That's very important. We expect a lot of rain. Just how much and exactly where all of it falls, we're not entirely sure. But the forecasts have been pretty accurate thus far. And looking forward, they've called for 30-plus inches of rain in the southeast corner of this state, and flooding is going to be, we've heard from a number of sources over the past few days that it's going to be catastrophic. And as you mentioned, the rivers going back down east and toward the south is really just going to conflate this problem moving forward over the next several days and realistically the next couple of weeks.
All right. Jeff Tiberi, WNC Capital Bureau Chief. Thank you, Jeff.
Absolutely, Frank.
Let's check in with the Red Cross now. Jerry Jameson is the Regional Communications Officer with the American Red Cross Greater Carolinas Region, which serves 47 counties in the state. And she's joining us from a shelter at East Mecklenburg High School in Charlotte. Jerry Jameson, welcome to the State of Things.
Thanks, Frank. Thanks for having me.
How are you and how are the people who at East Mecklenburg High School? How are things going?
I'm certain I'm better off than many. Things at the shelter are going very well. It's filling up, as are many of our shelters. It's busy. You know, it's bustling. We've got a lot of children. The age ranges from just a few months to the elderly. So it's quite a mix. But it's going well. The resiliency of the community never ceases to amaze me.
Well, last night, I know you had 12 shelters open. You had to open more this morning. How many do you have open?
Just in our 47 counties, we have 15 now. We're getting ready to open two more, one in Gaston County and one in McDowell County. Now, across the state last night, across North Carolina, not including the ones that were just open today, last night we had 106 shelters across the state.
Now, and about how many people do you know roughly are in shelters?
Well, I heard one of your previous guests say 20,000. That's probably a point in time now. Last night in the Red Cross and community shelters that we support, we had over 9,300 people last night, and more have come in since.
And more may come in from this time. More may come later. What's your advice to people who are coming to shelters? What should they know? What should they bring?
Well, the first thing is to come sooner rather than later. Don't wait. We've heard of stranded people. We don't want people to get stranded. We want you to come now if it is safe to do so and you're in the path or have any concerns. What you should bring are things that will keep you comfortable for a few days. If you have any special needs or a special pillow even, if you have young children, be sure to bring whatever they might need dietary-wise, diapers, things like that, or toddlers and older, perhaps games to keep them occupied, because they're going to be here for possibly a few days and they do get restless. Any elderly family members, be sure you have anything that will keep them comfortable as well. And just be prepared to stay for a few days. It's not your home, but it's going to be your home away from home for as long as may be needed or until it's safe to return to your home.
Anything you should not bring?
Well, no guns, no weapons, no drugs. That's sort of common sense. Anything that would intrude on anyone else, so don't bring any big electronic devices that are going to be loud because there's just not going to be a place for that. So just think of how you'd want to be treated by a new neighbor.
All right, Jerry Jameson, thank you so much.
Thank you, Frank.
Jerry Jameson, Regional Communications Officer with the American Red Cross Greater Carolinas Region. We're going to bring in someone now who evacuated because of Hurricane Florence. Kirsten Crook lives in Boiling Spring Lakes. She and her parents went to Atlanta, Georgia, and she joins us now. Hello, Kirsten.
Hello.
I understand that your boyfriend did stay behind in Leland, North Carolina. Have you been in touch with him yet? How is he doing?
He is doing well, posting Facebook videos of his horses. That's kind of why he stayed. He has five horses and couldn't evacuate them all. I also have friends in Leland that also have horses and couldn't leave. So I've been trying to keep up with them. My parents live, their house is in Southport, which is just south of me in Boiling Spring Lakes, and they live in downtown Southport. So they're very, very close to the water, and they've been in touch with their neighbors.
What do they say about the conditions there?
6 inches of standing water right now. They haven't had power for, I guess it'd probably be about 8 hours now. But the eye of the storm is stalled over us right now, so it's relatively calm from what everyone's saying, but that just means that we're only halfway through.
Yeah, so. Oh, absolutely. Well, and so talk about your decision to leave.
I was planning on staying. My father was planning on staying as well, and I was not comfortable leaving him there. But today is my mother's birthday, and she really didn't want us to stay. Also, I spent 10 years in New Orleans doing relief work first after Hurricane Katrina, and it was very apparent to me that a lot of people that could have left didn't, and there was also an issue of people that couldn't leave. But as someone that might not be much of a help, I know that I could help a little bit, but I wouldn't want to be in the way if there is a massive rescue effort that needs to be undertaken in my area. So it's hard to leave your stuff behind.
And you've also had some thoughts about people who do stay behind and the opinions that you've seen reflected on social media and elsewhere from others who have their thoughts about why do people stay behind? Why didn't you leave? And you have some thoughts about that.
Yes, I know that it's hard for anyone who hasn't been through a hurricane to fathom wanting to stay behind, but we're in a rural area. People have livestock. People have horses that are parts of their families they can't leave behind. And this was a big problem during Katrina. There was no public transportation to leave. In Southport, nor Boiling Springs, nor Leland was there public transportation to get people out of there. There weren't buses. There weren't, you know, they didn't have options for people that might not have had their own transportation. You know, if you're a poor family with only one car and you have more people than can fit in it, you're not going to decide who stays and who leaves. So a lot of times people that do stay don't really have a choice, and it's completely unfair to judge them like they are staying and being belligerent because they had no other choice.
What's it like for you now in Georgia?
Stressful. Can see everything happening online, but can't really do anything about it, though hopefully when this does blow over, we'll be able to pack up our cars and bring some supplies down there to help everybody put everything back together.
All right, Kirsten, thank you so much. Good luck with it all.
Thank you.
Kirsten Crook joined us from Atlanta. She left her house in Boiling Spring Lakes to evacuate ahead of Hurricane Florence. Rusty Jacobs joins us now. He's WUNC's politics reporter and has been following news about power outages and emergency response. Rusty Jacobs, welcome.
Thanks, Frank.
Can you give us an update in terms of power outages right now across the state?
Predictions are turning out to be true. Remember, utility authorities, utility officials predicting that up to 3 million across the state could lose power in the storm. We're still really in the early stage since landfall was early this morning from Hurricane Florence, and already more than half a million people have lost power, mostly in the southeastern part of the state, as you would expect, but more than 20,000 households in Wake County, and the Triangle isn't even feeling those heavy winds yet.
Now, how is the Duke Energy handling the situation in terms of their preparedness, and you know, are they able even to get out yet?
No, but they're ready. I mean, they've got crews from as far away as Texas, crews from the Midwest. I was driving back here after dropping my kids off in Asheville, which is already preparing for power outages, and saw a crew from Arkansas hustling eastward on I-40. So you've got 20,000 crews ready to go. The problem is those high winds. They can't get out there and really start restoring power until the winds have died down to a safe level. So they're there, they're ready to go. But at this point, the utility companies can just pretty much assess the damage and decide where to shut down power with downed lines.
Now, the other issue that Duke Energy is having to contend with is those coal ash ponds. And we understand that they've taken some efforts, some measures to mitigate the potential fallout should they become flooded. Any more on that and what's happening with coal ash?
Not that I know of, but you know, the not only the wind is not only a big threat, but again, we're looking at days unrelenting rainfall, right? Historic amounts, up to 40 inches down by the coast, and storm surge. Yesterday's National Weather Service saying storm surge in areas near the Pamlico and the Neuse Rivers will reach up to 13 feet, as high as the second story of a home, as Roy Cooper said, the governor. So a lot of threats still on the way because of this storm.
All right, Rusty, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Rusty Jacobs, WUNC's politics reporter, has been following news about power outages and emergency response. Just ahead, we'll take a look at some of the threat of overflowing hog waste lagoons in eastern North Carolina, and we'll get a weather update as well. And then take a look at what's happening in western North Carolina as people in the mountains prepare for the remnant of what is still Hurricane Florence. Stay with us. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. We continue our coverage of Hurricane Florence with a look at some of the environmental threats of this storm. Parts of eastern North Carolina are home to millions of hogs, and those hogs create a lot of waste. And the waste is stored in lagoons that have the potential to overflow during intense flooding, the kind of flooding predicted, and some of which we're already seeing with Hurricane Florence. Kemp Burdett joins us now from Pender County. He is a Cape Fear River keeper and joins us now. Hello, Kemp.
Hello.
First of all, tell us how things look where you are right now.
Here, I'm about 30 miles inland on the Black River. Still gusty. The wind seems to have shifted a little bit from being out of the north to a little bit more out of the east. We've got right this minute light rain, and we haven't had as much rain as I expected right here, although I've heard that in other places close by there's been a lot.
So what kind of work do you do on the Cape Fear River?
I'm the Cape Fear River keeper. I'm a environmental advocate, and our mission at Cape Fear River Watch is to protect and improve the water quality of the Cape Fear River. So anything from water sampling to monitoring to legal action to hold polluters accountable, some education programming. We've done a lot of work on coal ash, a lot of work on Gen X lately, and we do a lot of work on factory farms.
And those factory farms that we're talking about now, obviously swine concentrations, CAFOs is the other name for that. What kind of threat do they pose, particularly at a time like this?
They pose an enormous threat. In all of eastern North Carolina, the Cape Fear Basin is the area on the planet where there are more concentrated factory farms than any place else. They cover the landscape in Duplin, Sampson County, Pender County, and I know you mentioned swine farms, but the other piece of this is that there are just an exploding number of poultry farms, which also produce the same amount of animal waste that's piled out in fields or under sheds that aren't protected from things like floods. So on a swine farm, the waste is piped from the barns where these animals are confined, thousands of animals at a time, piped in a liquid form into an unlined cesspool, basically, adjacent to the barn. So these can be huge, football size lagoons filled with untreated hog feces and urine. It's in an open air, unlined, and most of these facilities in North Carolina, the vast majority of these facilities in North Carolina are located in the coastal plain on rivers like the Cape Fear, on rivers like the Neuse, Pamlico Tar.
But and the tributaries of those rivers.
Right. We did understand, though, we've talked to our reporter, Jason DeBruin, who has spoken with hog farmers and spokespeople and said, look, they're lowering the water levels in those lagoons in preparation for Hurricane Florence. Won't that be enough?
Well, let me be clear what lowering the water levels in those lagoons means. That just means that these factory farms are pumping that waste out onto the landscape immediately before a hurricane. So lowering the lagoons just means they're emptying the waste onto fields, which are inevitably going to flood and wash all of that waste into rivers and streams.
And what's the impact? What's the environmental impact of that?
Well, the impact of waste in waterways, there are several impacts. Most immediately, imagine the situation that we're in where people downstream of those facilities are likely to find their homes, their businesses flooded, and they're not just going to be flooded with river water, they're going to be flooded with animal feces. And so people are going to be out frantically working to secure their spaces, and there's going to be a lot of cuts and scrapes and things like that, and then people are going to be out standing in raw, untreated animal feces. People are going to be splashing water around. Some of that water may come in contact with their face, and the pathogens in, you know, raw animal waste are serious, and they make people very sick. That's well known. The impacts on the ecosystem are going to be significant. You're going to see dissolved oxygen problems. You are going to see increased nutrients in waterways.
That can lead to algae blooms and other things that can often leads to fish kills and this sort of thing, right?
Exactly.
All right.
And kind of stacked on top of the problem of the waste lagoons, the cesspools, the enormous piles of poultry litter, piles the size of houses I'm talking about. I don't mean small little piles. So these things are sitting out in the field right now. Those fields are going to be inundated by floodwater. These facilities are located in the floodplains frequently. There are hundreds located in floodplains in North Carolina. So as these rivers rise, they will rise around these lagoons and they rise and over top of these lagoons, they will wash over the litter piles. All of that waste will be in the river, making its way down the river. That will also weaken the lagoons as the water rises up around the edge, and danger of having lagoons breach completely and empty their contents very rapidly into rivers and streams. As the waters rise around the lagoons, they're also rising around the barns, and so you have thousands of animals confined inside barns that are drowning, and so you've got animal mortality that you've got to deal with, both poultry and swine. And what's really troubling is that the Advanced Hydrologic Prediction Service, which is a NOAA service, has been looking at rivers in coastal North Carolina. And the last time I had internet was able to look, the Northeast Cape Fear River, which flows through Duplin County, which is the most highly concentrated area for CAFOs in the world, was projected to reach all-time records, records higher than Hurricane Floyd, records higher than Hurricane Matthew, higher than Fran, 2 feet higher than the next closest storm, which was Hurricane Floyd. And so that could be catastrophic for the Northeast Cape Fear River.
All right. Kemp Burdett, Cape Fear Riverkeeper, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Kemp joined us from Pender County. We're going to go to western North Carolina now, which is expected to feel the effects of Hurricane Florence in the coming days. Matt Bush is news director at partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio in Asheville and joins us now. Welcome back, Matt.
Thank you, Frank.
So what are conditions like right now in western North Carolina?
Well, right now it's sunny, actually, in western North Carolina, and we're just in a holding pattern waiting for the storm to arrive here as its category has downshifted over the past 24 to 48 hours. The weather forecast really for this area, once the storm arrives, has stayed the same. Looking to see rain start sometime later tomorrow, and with the heaviest rainfall expected Sunday afternoon. Winds won't be very strong, according to the forecast, and sort of the authorities here are sort of banking on that being the case, that the winds won't be much more than 40 miles per hour.
So what does that mean? You expect flood. Will there be enough rains to warn warn about potential floods in the area?
Absolutely, yeah. But many of these areas, the heaviest rainfall is expected east of Asheville, and these are some areas, Polk County and McDowell County in particular, that saw some flooding and landslides, very significant instances in late May and early June after about a two-week period where these areas, including here in Asheville as well, saw about 2 feet of rain in 2 weeks. So in McDowell County, their emergency services people were had a Facebook Live press conference this morning and discussed that there was a small area in the northern part of the county that had seen 5 inches of rain already this week. Wow. It's a very isolated area, but more rain that could come through, and we could see anywhere from 4 to 10 inches in parts east of Asheville. You know, that's going to cause flooding if that does occur.
And you had some flooding and heavy rains a few months ago, right?
Yes. It was the end of May. Like I said, 2 weeks, we got about 2 feet of rain. That caused some flooding in the Biltmore Village area of Asheville down by the Biltmore Estate. It was the worst flooding that area had seen in about 14 years. It's where the Swannanoa River connects with the French Broad River. And then further east in McDowell County, there were landslides that had closed I-40 briefly. And then in the town of Old Fort, there was some significant flooding. And then down in Polk County, where Tryon is, there were landslides. Two journalists were killed covering the weather down there in May.
What kind of preparations are going underway now in western North Carolina?
Well, right now, again, a lot of, you know, just sort of waiting and seeing. There is one shelter that will be open this evening in Marion in McDowell County at the YMCA. That will open at 6. The authorities there saying there is no mandatory evacuation order right now, but they're urging anyone who lives in a flood-prone area to think about leaving before the storm gets here. Down in Biltmore Village, there is some building up of, you know, sandbags and things like that, just in case this does happen again. I think a lot of what happened in May and June is still very fresh in people's minds, so it's being taken very seriously.
All right, Matt, thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you, Frank.
Matt Bush is the news director for partner station Blue Ridge Public Radio. He joined us from Asheville. All right, well, let's find out what's happening with this storm right now. Gary Lackman studies high-impact weather systems. He's a professor of atmospheric science at NC State. Welcome to the program, Gary.
Thank you, Frank.
Tell us more about this, the particulars of this storm. Well, let's start with the trajectory now. Are you and others who do this kind of work more comfortable now with predicting where this thing is going? Has it stabilized to the point where we can get an accurate prediction of where it might go from here?
Yeah, I think there's pretty good consensus now in most of the computer models and the Hurricane Center that it will, you know, drift very slowly westward, and maybe dip slightly southward, and then turn back towards the north, and that could bring heavy rain and flooding conditions to the western part of the state. But, you know, there was the tricky part was when it slowed down. And whenever a storm like this is moving slowly, then that adds to some uncertainty.
And why is that? And maybe you can talk about some of the factors that influenced the sudden move to the south. What happened there?
Well, when it was moving across the western North Atlantic, there was a pretty a healthy steering current pushing it towards the northwest. But then when it ran out of track, essentially, and sort of fell between the influence of two different pressure systems, and so it really didn't have much steering it. And that led to, you know, actually a worst-case scenario because you had the system effectively stalling where it is now. And then, you know, now there's a little bit of steering. It's you know, in a way wobbling itself towards the southwest, but then it will be steered more strongly when it moves towards the north by another weather system that's moving into the central U.S.
You said when storms slow down or become slower, they're harder to predict. Why is that?
Well, it's sort of like a top that's wobbling without any real clear forcing to make it move in a certain direction. It's also interacting with the coastline, which complicates things. And, you know, there's a lot of sort of small-scale features that can lead to a wobble this way or that way. But for the past several days, there's been a pretty consistent view on which way it will be moving and that it would slow down. I think some people were expressing that, these people, the models are all over the place. We don't know what to do. But actually, on the contrary, I would say the models told us that it would slow down, which it did, and they also told us that we needed to be prepared for a variety of scenarios once it did slow down. And I think that helped people that might be in harm's way to prepare for the effects of the storm.
Well, yeah, and the impact models were pretty good. Storm surge, rainfall amounts, and even wind gusts. So all of that seemed to be very close to what we're actually seeing. How does Hurricane Florence compare to other storms that you've studied?
Well, you know, I think the fact that it was as strong as it was and then slowed down near the coast, I mean, we won't know until it's all over what the impacts are, but certainly when a storm moves this slowly, you have the potential for accumulating incredible amounts of rainfall. It'll be in the coastal areas through repeated tidal cycles, and then you just also get the continual pounding of the wind that can lead to additional damage. And there's even a threat of tornadoes in some of the outer bands. So the fact that the same areas are being subjected to these conditions for such an extended period of time is somewhat unique. I mean, it's not unprecedented, but at least for recent storms, this one is moving more slowly than most of the ones that we've looked at.
Does the slowing down account for the spreading out of this thing? Does it tend to spread out more if it can't go as fast?
Well, there's other mechanisms at work, too. You know, when storms move to higher latitudes and start interacting with land, often their wind field will expand. And so I'm not sure if, you know, there may be some connection to its movement, but I think there's other processes that can lead to the expansion of the wind field. And that was actually even starting to happen before it slowed down. But it will be an interesting case to study. We'll have to go back after the fact and look into some of these aspects to see if we can understand them better.
All right, Gary Lachman, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Gary Lachman's a professor of atmospheric science at NC State. Well, let's find out what's happening again on the ground in eastern North Carolina. Spectrum News reporter Chris Williams is back with us. He is in Kinston. Welcome back, Chris.
Well, thank you, Frank.
It's good to have you back again. I just want to get a sense of what's going on there right now at the end of our hour. What are you seeing in Kinston?
Well, Kinston, the rain has picked up just a little bit. We are seeing more trees uprooted as the winds pick up off and on throughout the afternoon. We'll see these bands of heavy rains and high winds, and then it will be a little bit calm with moderate rain and low winds. And so it's just a really just a wait and see here. We expect for this to continue throughout the evening, maybe sometime early tomorrow morning.
And I know you're having to keep track of other parts of the state, as particularly eastern North Carolina, as you make your plans to move on. What are you hearing from New Bern?
Well, we have a crew in New Bern, and they had to move to get to higher ground because the water level keeps rising. I'm going to go down there and relieve them as soon as I hang up with you. And we do hear that rescues are still underway, and we do know that some people are still trapped.
All right. Thank you so much for joining us, Chris.
Thank you.
All right, be careful. Spectrum News reporter Chris Williams joined us from Kinston, and you can find out all about our coverage of Hurricane Florence at our website, stateofthings.org. Our program is produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, and Jennifer Brookland. Robin Copley is our technical director with help from Al Wadarski today. North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.